From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. When you show out-of-town guests around San Francisco, where do you take them? One of my favorite spots is Coit Tower in Telegraph Hill. The view is great, of course, and there are those famous parrots. But the real draw is those wonderful New Deal 1930s-era murals. But those murals are now in trouble, endangered by the elements and a lack of maintenance. The Coit Tower murals are not the only historic public art project that's threatened. New Deal-era works are also in trouble all around the state and the nation. In the next hour, we'll talk about what's at risk and what can be done to safeguard the public art of our past. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. You can find them in post offices in Berkeley or Burlingame, at Coit Tower in San Francisco, or the Beach Chalet restaurant on the edge of Golden Gate Park. They're murals that depict life in California that were commissioned in the 1930s during the New Deal era as part of various public art and public works project. But now some of those projects are in trouble, including, as you may have seen in Spencer Michael's PBS NewsHour report this week, one of the most celebrated public arts works projects from that era, the murals at Coit Tower. The problems range from the impact of fog to the impact of tight budgets. And in this hour of Forum, we're going to talk about what's at risk and what can be done to protect a unique resource. A resource that is testimony to both art itself and to a way of thinking about the role of art in public life. Just listen to this old newsreel clip.
The WPA has contributed greatly to the culture of America. Painters, too, contribute their bit to making the works program a real and permanent accomplishment. These reproductions of the American scene of today will make this one of the most fertile periods of our country's art. Some of this work is done on canvas, but much of it is created on the walls of our schools, libraries, and other public buildings in the form of mural paintings.
A newsreel clip from the 1930s talking about those murals and about the value of public art in public life. And that's our topic during this hour of Forum. We also want to hear from you during our conversation. Do you have a favorite New Deal era public arts project that is close to you that you particularly value? Or perhaps you have a question about whether or not it is in some trouble, whether that's a post office mural or a park shelter. We'd like to hear your thoughts through our hour as well. Let me get to our guests, though, and introduce them to you. John Gollinger joins us. He is chair of the Protect Coit Tower Committee. John, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
And joining us as well is Dr. Gray Brecken. He is the project scholar for the Living New Deal Project. He's a geographer and a visiting scholar in the University of California's Department of Geography. Dr. Brecken, good morning as well.
Good morning, Dave.
Well, since we began with that little bit of sound from the 1930s that takes us back in such a distinctive way to that time, give us a sense of what was going on at that point in American history and why it was that these wonderful projects came into being.
Well, they all started actually in 1933, quite early actually, even before the WPA, because we were in the depths of the Great Depression. Roosevelt is inaugurated in March of 1933 and hits the ground running with the first 100 days in which they begin setting up the alphabet soup agencies. Particularly the Public Works Administration, the Civilian Conservation Corps, to put people back to work again. But by the winter of that year, 1933, it was clear that it wasn't working fast enough. And so by an executive decree in November of 1933, Roosevelt created something called the Civil Works Administration and put it under the administration of Harry Hopkins. Hopkins was an astonishing character. He was a social worker, but he also understood that in addition to just putting people to work, building roads and airports and everything, refurbishing schools, that artists are among the first to be hit in a depression. They're the first to starve, and that includes musicians, it includes actors, etc. So right from the get-go in the CWA, they set up an art division, an art project, and that created thousands of works of art. And one of the first of them, and certainly one of the largest, are the murals in Coit Tower done at that time.
It's so we couldn't play the audio from that newsreel clip that we heard in the beginning. The first part of that clip, unfortunately, the audio was too difficult to understand, but it says something like, artists are fragile and they're not really suited for hard manual work, so they have to be supported through this project. Was that controversial at all at the time? It seems like today the idea of we need public money to support starving artists would be a tougher sell. Was it not a tough sell during that time?
Well, it was a tough sell. I mean, there were opponents of the New Deal right from the get-go, and they've never given up. You know, it's been almost 80 years now. They've never stopped attacking Roosevelt and the New Deal. But one of the things I found so interesting about the New Deal, and especially people like Harry Hopkins or Francis Perkins, is they believed that you should put people back to work not only for nourishment, but also for their self-respect. And you should try to place them in jobs where they were suited. So one of the things is they said a violinist's hands would be ruined by doing road work because the enemy said, well, they should be out, you know, working with everybody else, breaking stones and everything. No, they felt that they should be doing what they were trained to do. And they also had this much larger vision that we were going to build an American civilization, a civilization worthy of the name. And how are civilizations remembered? They're remembered through their arts.
Dr. Gray Brecken, he heads up the Living New Deal Project, also a visiting scholar at UC's Department of Geography. John Gollinger joins us as well, who is with the Protect Coit Tower Committee. Describe what we have at Coit Tower, as Dr. Brecken mentioned. It was one of the early ones, one of the most famous still, of the murals. What took place at that time, the number of artists that were involved, and what you see if you go up to Coit Tower today?
Sure. I mean, Coit Tower, it's really, you have three distinct treasures when you go there. You see, obviously, the building itself, which is a fluted shaft designed by this Arthur Brown Jr., who also designed City Hall. It's an amazing structure just to see both when you go there and when you enter San Francisco. You can see it from just about anywhere. We have the views from the top of the tower, some from around the tower if you find the right spot. And then, of course, inside the treasure of the murals, there are works by 26 artists. And as Dr. Brecken said, you know, Coit Tower was the pilot project. It was the public works of art project, the predecessor to the WPA mural projects that occurred elsewhere. And this is where 26 artists got together. They each earned $1 an hour for their work. And over the course of 6 months, a total cost of $25,000, they created 26 murals that are really display a breadth of a reflection of real life at the times. People working, people playing, people protesting, and people interacting in a real sense.
You mentioned the protesting part. There is a political edge to them. Describe some of the murals that give you that sense of the sort of left-leaning nature, at least, of some of the art.
Sure. Now, you have to remember, of course, in addition to the New Deal in the broader context nationwide here in San Francisco, this also was the same time as the great strike on the waterfront. The labor union strike occurred in early 1934 at the same time that these muralists were working. So there was in several of the murals a depiction of marching down the street, holding signs. There's a few one of the murals that is called City Life by Victor Arnoff depicts people some people who are struggling. There's actually one scene where there's a pickpocketing a wealthy businessman, sort of indicating the class clash that was going on around. One of my favorite murals and one of the reasons I got involved was that Bernard Zockheim, who was one of the organizers, the only Jewish muralist, his mural called Library is one of the most political. You do have to read it.
Is that the one where you're pulling the copy of Karl Marx's book out of the shelf?
Right. It's the one where he depicted a different artist pulling the copy of Karl Marx's book.
They were pushing the limits.
There's also, because as I think many listeners know, and I learned from the movie Cradle Will Rock by Tim Robbins, the Diego Rivera in Rockefeller Center had just been smashed, had just been taken apart because of clash between John D. Rockefeller and Diego Rivera. And that's depicted in that mural, too, a protest of that.
I want to get soon to the question of the endangered nature of these murals, not only there but elsewhere. But before we do, it's striking when we talk about this, Gray Brecken, about how current it all feels. As you were describing this, John Gollinger, my head went immediately to the fact that the Occupy movement is resuming in San Francisco today.
Yes.
I mean, and all that focus on class. I mean, there's something about those murals that speak very directly to our times.
Oh, absolutely. There's actually one mural where you see out of work laborers looking at you, and you can see the fury in their eyes. And we tend to forget, especially the enemies of the New Deal, tend to forget how close we were to a revolution or a civil war at that time. People were really angry. They were in despair, but then it turns to anger. And in a situation like that, it becomes very volatile, and you can have a revolution, an overthrow. So one of the reasons that Roosevelt and the people he gathered around him had these projects was to make sure that didn't happen. He knew that if his projects, the New Deal, did not succeed, as he once said, he would be the last American president. And they were very effective in doing that. You know, they took the pressure off of the capitalist system, which had nearly committed suicide a few years before, by creating all of these projects.
And how effective was it? What was the breadth of it? How many projects were there? How many people really were able to earn a livelihood because of those New Deal arts projects?
Well, there were hundreds of thousands of projects, and they range all the way from murals that we saw, true fresco murals, I might add. You know, the artists were looking back at the Italian Renaissance and trying to recreate that for their time in the Coit Tower murals. They range from murals to sculpture to wood prints to an incredible number of posters. There was lots of a revival of folk arts at the same time. And then there were easel paintings. And these all had to go into public institutions like hospitals and libraries. So many public institutions still have a lot of this stuff. The arts museums in San Francisco have thousands of New Deal pieces of art that are almost never put on display. Whereas if you go up to Portland, their art museum has two rooms dedicated to the permanent display of New Deal arts, some of which is just stunning.
We'll get in a bit to some of the ones that are still visible in post offices around the state and around the country. But let's talk some about the problems facing the Coit Tower murals in particular and what the nature of those problems are. Damage, John Gollinger, because of the fog that seeps in. So there's sort of a natural environmental problem that you're contending with, but also basic maintenance issues. What are the threats that are taking place?
That's right. I mean, the broader issue that's become clear, and this isn't the first time in the 80 or so years Coit Tower has been around that Coit Tower's sort of been in trouble. But I'm hoping that this is actually a time we can fix. The structural problem is that no one's really in charge of Coit Tower. I mean, City Hall, for example, has a City Hall Preservation Commission, and there are people who meet, on a regular basis, and they, figure out what needs to be done to keep the City Hall building in good shape. In Coit Tower, we have two agencies, really even more. The Recreation and Park Department is in charge of sort of the building, and the Art Commission is tasked with preserving the murals. Both of them, I think, are trying to do a good job, but in the Recreation and Park Department sense, they've got hundreds of other facilities to worry about. So no one's really watching out. And what that's meant is that, over the last two decades, there was a restoration in 1990 of the murals. As you said, water damage has occurred in several places that has leaked out from pipes. But there's more than that. There's been damage from regular wear and tear. I mean, unlike at MoMA or most art galleries, you walk in the front door at Coit Tower, there's no one there to greet you. There's no one there to say, please don't touch the murals. Mm-hmm. These are precious works. I mean, people from around the world wander in mostly to see, many of them really just to go to the top. And they don't necessarily realize these weren't just painted yesterday. These were painted 80 years ago. So having someone there, not having someone there means they get damaged. There's more. Unfortunately, recently there was a reconstruction project of the elevator about a year ago. And it's our understanding that those construction workers were given the run of the second floor murals, and most people haven't seen those because they're largely closed off unless you take a tour. And in the process of fixing the elevator, apparently those companies or those workers used the mural rooms as storage lockers for their heavy equipment, and they were some of them were significantly damaged, and that needs to be corrected.
And what about the question of funding for this? There is, you mentioned the elevator ride you can take to get the view. There's money that's netted from that, concessions there as well. Does that money stay with Coit Tower?
It doesn't. I mean, that's something that makes Coit Tower, I think, also distinct. Besides it being, a symbolic location in addition to housing these works of art, Coit Tower generates far more than enough to take care of itself. Last year, for example, Coit Tower brought in nearly $1 million. The city got more than half of that, about $540,000, mostly, as you said, from people paying $7 to ride the elevator. But it's not the case that really any of that money currently is dedicated to Coit Tower. And it goes to a general pot of money, that some of which gets spent there as needed.
And the ballot measure that you're trying to put forward would solve that from your point of view? It would allow for that money to stay with Koi Tower?
It would begin the process of solving that. I mean, this is, as I said, it really is going to be about sort of what's the proper way to steward Koi Tower. The ballot measure, the Protect Koi Tower initiative that a group of folks is putting forward would make it city policy to prioritize the money raised at Koi Tower for Koi Tower as needed. It wouldn't say all of it has to be spent there, but it would say it shouldn't be the last place that Koi Tower money spent. It should be the first.
Well, we wanted to get a sense of how the city views the problem that you just described. So Philip Ginsberg has joined us as well. He's general manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. Mr. Ginsberg, thanks for joining us as well.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good morning, Dave. Good morning, John. And good morning, Dr. Brecklin.
Give us your thought, then, on the problem that you just heard John Gollinger describing. First, from a pure kind of revenue standpoint, what do you think of the idea that the revenue that's netted at Koi Tower stay at Koi Tower?
Well, let's just take a quick step back before we dive into that. And I want to note that we all love and cherish the murals, and I think we all share the same vision of coming up with some strategies to protect them. And just one little historical anecdote: I was listening to the earlier part of the conversation. It's my understanding that some of the content from the original murals was so controversial after the 1934 longshoremen strike in San Francisco that the debate became so heated that the tower was actually padlocked for several months before the frescoes were finally open to the public in the fall of 1934. So it's a big part of the city's history, and it was the home of a pretty interesting First Amendment debate.
Interesting. And so as fast forward now, 80 years, still, of course, a question of focus and debate about where we spend our money. Where do you stand on this idea of having there more money that's netted at Koi Tower stay with Koi Tower? And about a sort of, I guess, clearer sense, John Gollinger was making the point that it's not clear exactly who's in charge of Koi Tower itself.
Well, I think John raises a good point. The Arts Commission is definitely in charge and responsible citywide for caring for our public art collection, of which the murals are a part. We have responsibility for the building and grounds around Koi Tower. In my mind, that's a relatively clear demarcation of responsibilities, but I do understand John's point in that regard. I think we all do need to work together to figure out strategies to preserve and protect this cherished San Francisco icon and the incredible art that's inside it. It's no surprise governments are struggling. The Arts Commission is really struggling with coming up with the funding needed to protect its public art collection. The Recreation and Park Department has over $1 billion worth of deferred maintenance needs all throughout the city that, we're trying to address. So the problems are very real. We do recognize the importance of Koi Tower to the history of the city and the historic importance of the art inside them, and so we're trying to do our part. We've come up with about $250,000, which we are giving to the Art Commission to kickstart their mural preservation efforts, and then we want to structure a new concession out there. And by the way, there's been a gift shop out there for decades and decades and decades, to require that 1% of the revenue generated from the gift shop actually go directly to mural preservation. Now, why doesn't all of the money that is generated at Koi Tower stay at Koi Tower? Well, because as John noted, we have a really vast system, and we have a couple of different assets throughout the city, such as Koi Tower, such as some of our institutions in Golden Gate Park, such as Candlestick Park, where the Niners are hosting the NFC Championship on Sunday, which generate a significant amount of revenue for our entire park system. So if all of the money generated at Koi Tower stayed at Koi Tower, a rec center in the Excelsior or the Bayview would be hurt by that. So it's a balance. It really is a balance.
Philip Ginsberg, general manager for the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. couple of follow-up questions on what Philip Ginsberg was saying, Dr. Gray Brecken. Would $250,000 make a difference? I mean, what's the nature of the problem at Coit Tower? Would that take care of some of the ongoing issues as far as maintaining the murals?
Well, I haven't seen any estimates for the restoration or for a guard to be permanently stationed there. But so I'll toss to John on this one. It seems like a lot of money offhand, but that could be quite expensive, actually. Restoring murals of that size would be very expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, did I hear a commitment to actually write a check? Because the language we've heard since we started this effort was that Brecken Park would potentially, if needed, up to $250,000 to the Art Commission. If Director Ginsberg, if I heard him correctly, he said they're prepared to write a check today to help get the effort started. Is that correct?
Philip Ginsberg?
Committed to the Arts Commission that we are going to contribute $250,000 to their efforts at mural restoration. We really do want to do our part, but this has got to be a partnership. And again, I want to reiterate that, we are not entrusted with the responsibility of preserving our public art collection in San Francisco. It's not the Recreation and Park Department's area of expertise.
Right.
But you know, we do recognize the importance of the endeavor and want to help out in that effort. And I haven't seen any estimates on what a restoration project would ultimately cost. But I don't know that the amount that we can contribute at the outset would solve it entirely, but it's a start.
I'm sorry, just to interject for a moment, because we lost a little bit of the beginning of your answer, Philip Ginsberg. Did we hear you say that you are going to that the $250,000 contribution from Recken Parks is firm? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank
absolutely.
You. Yep.
And I think even more significantly, for the first time ever, we want to structure a relationship with whoever the concessionaire ends up being to operate the gift shop, that there is a dedicated portion of revenue that would go towards both mural preservation and other deferred maintenance issues at the tower.
Well, so, and John Gollinger.
If I may, I mean, 1%, well, absolutely, you know, I think that's the right path to make sure that there's a percentage of the concessions that go back to Coit Tower. Director Ginsberg, I think, knows, I'm looking at the figures in front of me from his office, what that means is last year they would have written a check for $5,400. $5,400, I think, would pay for
1% of the gross revenue generated out there, John.
So it's about $9,000.
Yeah.
$10,000.
So listen, I mean, again, you know, this is about it's not just about Coit Tower from Recken Park's perspective.
Well, that's the problem. Yeah.
It's actually about making sure that, you know, all of our families can utilize our park system and can have clean, safe parks and make healthy, you know, have healthy recreational choices before them. And, you know, we have a few properties throughout the city, again, Candlestick Park, some of our institutions in Golden Gate Park, some of our large concerts. If all of the revenue generated at Golden Gate Park stayed at Golden Gate Park, all of our neighborhood parks would shut down.
It's an interesting point. I'm sorry, we have to get to a break, Phil Ginsberg, but stay with us if you can, because we'll continue our conversation after the break. And we want to widen this out, too, about sort of general support for public arts projects and talk about the way in which public arts projects and WPA and New Deal era projects are in need, not just in San Francisco, but around the Bay Area as well, and what we can do to support that treasure from our past. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on the subject, too. Should we be investing more in saving these projects? And if you have questions or concerns about New Deal era projects near you, we'd like to hear your questions and concerns, too. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the preservation of New Deal era art, in particular the murals at Coit Tower, which are undergoing some problems and are in need of some help. We're talking about how we can preserve not only the murals, though, at Coit Tower, but other New Deal era art projects around the city of San Francisco, the Bay Area, and the state as well. If you have a particular favorite WPA or New Deal era public arts project that you have a question about or a concern about, we'd like to hear from you. 866-733-6786 is our number. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Dr. Gray Brecken joins us. He is the project scholar for the Living New Deal Project. John Gollinger as well, chair of the Protect Coit Tower Committee. And Phil Ginsberg can stay with us for a few minutes longer. He's general manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. Let's take another Coit Tower call and get to that first off. Doris in Berkeley joins us. Doris, go ahead.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you so much. This is obviously an urgent topic and a good one to discuss, but my concern, because I was at Coit Tower a couple of months ago with some overseas relatives, and I have to tell you, I was embarrassed and somewhat offended by how under-maintained the whole area around Coit Tower was. I mean, I know the murals are important. There's no question about that, and they need to be maintained by definition. But the grounds are abysmal. There are trash cans right as you approach the entrance stairs to the tower. Trash cans smell of, I don't know what the polite word would be, but people who had done things in public that they shouldn't have. It was just generally completely unkempt. And my concern is, if there's any money being spent at all ever for such public places, and this covers pretty much the gamut of the whole Bay Area, we need a commitment to routine maintenance with a commitment to making it great. And I understand the idea of funding the restoration and preservation of the murals. That's clearly an objective we all should root for. But the ongoing maintenance is something we need to take pride in.
Let me hold you there, Doris.
I urge you all to go visit on a day when it's not raining and inhale deeply and see how you feel.
Doris, thanks. And Phil Ginsberg, that's your dilemma, right? I mean, you've got a lot of things that you have to contend with.
It certainly is, and I am sorry that Doris didn't have a pleasant experience out there. We actually have some great partnerships with Friends of Pioneer Park and even the Telegraph Hill Dwellers, one of the groups that John is involved in, and we want the grounds and the structure to be as spectacular as it deserves to be, but the fact is the Recreation and Park Department in San Francisco is responsible for stewarding nearly 12% of the city's land, yet we receive less than 2% of the city's general fund. And we are probably short. Spur, it was a public policy think tank in San Francisco, just did a study estimating that our operating budget was probably short by about $30 to $40 million of what it should be to operate the kind of system that Doris wants. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't or shouldn't try to do a better job out there, and we do quarterly park maintenance scores, and I'm not quite sure what was happening the day that Doris was out there. But, you know, I do actually think that the grounds are in, pretty good condition. I go out there pretty frequently, and we've got some really passionate volunteer park stewards out there. But that is our dilemma. That is our dilemma. You know, we have over 4,000 acres of open space in the city, and we've got a lot of it in very underserved neighborhoods, and we need to spread our resources to make sure that equitably, to make sure that all of our parks are clean, safe, and fun, not just Coit Tower.
Phil Ginsberg, the general manager of San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. I know you have to leave us. Thanks for joining in and being part of our conversation this morning.
We were talking about the Arts Commission and the impact of the $250,000 gift. I think there was one interesting piece of information that's out there. You know, the total Arts Commission budget for its public art, for maintenance of its public art collection, is $75,000 for the entire city. And so, you know, our contribution of $250,000 is serious. And, you know, I also think it might be worth looking at ways in which the public can, rather than, you know, focusing purely on Coit Tower, maybe helping the Art Commission sort of garner the resources it needs to actually take care of its public art collection, and making that the priority.
Phil Ginsberg, thanks, and thanks for joining us this morning.
It was a pleasure to participate in the conversation.
Dr. Gray Brecken, this is the dilemma, isn't it? I mean, there are so many needs out there, and times are difficult. So,
they were more difficult during the Great Depression.
Yeah, so make the case for why more ought to be devoted towards the preservation of public art in particular, as opposed to just all of the other general maintenance needs of our general city and park environs.
Well, I'd like to talk about what's systemically wrong with our culture right now, because when you look at what they accomplished during about 6 years of the Great Depression and what we can't accomplish now, it's a staggering. You know, it wasn't just the arts. The park that surrounds Coit Tower is a WPA project. They improved every park in San Francisco, also in the East Bay. They planted thousands of street trees. all of this was, and so much more of the infrastructure, the Bay Bridge, you know, the approaches to the Golden Gate Bridge, the Caldecott Tunnel, the Cow Palace, Treasure Island, our post offices, all of this is falling into ruin now because we decided that we didn't want to pay the taxes that are necessary to maintain a civilization. So we're getting a state of barbarism now, and it's happening gradually enough. I'm glad that Doris noticed how the whole thing is just starting to unravel. Because it's happening so gradually that most people don't know it. How can we possibly be closing up to half of the U.S. post offices, much of which contains the only public art in many small American towns, you know? This is absurd. We're closing our state parks as well. Those state parks, our national parks, our municipal parks, were creations of the WPA and the CCC. Tilden Park over in the East Bay is a creation of the CCC and the WPA. They did this during the Great Depression. We can't do it anymore. And one last thing. In Berkeley, they're closing the old heated pool. That elderly people and disabled people were so dependent on. They're closing it because we can't afford it anymore. All across the nation in the 1930s, they created orthopedic hospitals with warm water pools for people with disabilities, and they are beautiful. We have one right here in San Francisco, but it's not used anymore.
Dr. Gray Brecken, yeah.
If I could just add, I mean, I also think, you know, that's what's so inspiring about the New Deal today, 80 years later, to people like me who heard about it from our grandparents, is that leaders actually step up and find ways to engage the citizens and propose things to get, you know, get things done that seem difficult rather than posing, you know, sort of choices between, you know, worse and even worse. And
yes.
I think that's something
it
we
really
can
do. It really is a race to the bottom.
We can really do better. And that's, I mean, the Protect Coit Tower at protectcoittower.org, the ballot measure idea is an excuse to get citizens involved, if nothing else. And that's what we're hoping will lead to real change.
And let's hear from more of our listeners on this question. Do you agree with the case that Dr. Gray Brecken was making and John Gollinger as well about more resources going into not only the preservation of public art, but the role in which art can play in public life? We'd like to hear from you at 866-733-6786. Let's take another caller. Mike joins us from Alameda. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the point is very well taken that during the 30s, people knew how to deal with the issues that confront us in terms of unemployment, staggering unemployment. We're facing the same issues today, and we're taking the exact opposite tack. So I think we do that at our peril. On a more personal note, my father worked with Lucien Lebeau, one of the artists at the Kaiser Shipyards in Richmond during the war. And he would actually follow him around and take his art out of the garbage cans after Lucien finished it because he thought he was a pretty good artist. Could you talk a little bit about Lebeau and where he ended up?
Mike, thanks. Dr. Gray Brecken?
Well, I'm not sure where he ended up. He's a very, very fine painter, and his most famous murals are the ones out at the Beach Chalet. And they're spectacular. They're another picture of, well, a prosperous San Francisco during the 1930s. It's ideal. But he also was trained as a tailor. And so just when you go there, just look and you'll actually see the stitchings in people's clothes at that time. But he also did a beautiful mural on the staircase, I believe, at Coit Tower, which is as you climb up the stairs, you're actually climbing up Powell Street with the cable cars going by you.
And for people who aren't familiar with San Francisco, Beach Chalet is on the western edge of the city, western edge of Golden Gate Park, right near the Cliff House as you approach Ocean Beach. And how about the status of those murals? Are they in all right shape, Dr. Brecken?
Yeah, they're in pretty good shape, actually. I mean, that's a great brew pub there. I love going out there to watch the sunset over the Pacific, and then you get the art with it, too. And I think that some of the profits from the brew pub have gone into restoring and keeping those murals safe.
Yeah. Here's a couple of suggestions from people who think that there are great other places that ought to be visited. This person writes in, whether it's visiting friends or snooty know-it-alls from the city, I like to offer a walk down Yacht Road for a look and listen of the wave organ. Is that part? Is that a WPA project, the aquatic park?
The aquatic park is, but the wave organ is not. That was actually created by the Exploratorium out by the St. Francis Yacht Harbor, the jetty of which is WPA.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's one about my favorite WPA project is the Muni L. Terraville Loop around the zoo. It was completed in 1937. Anyone know about the loop of Muni track, I guess.
Yes, they extended the Muni system. They also built the Midtown Manhattan subway system. They were improving transportation infrastructure all over the country. I would like to say that, unfortunately, because of the attention that is focusing on Coit Tower, there are other works of art in the city and elsewhere that are in very grave danger. And one of the ones that scares me the most is the beautiful Noah's Ark murals in the Mother's House at the zoo, which has been closed because of seismic danger. The last time I saw it, which was about 6 years ago, those murals were just practically falling off of the wall.
And this is in San Francisco Zoo?
It's in the zoo, yeah, in the Mother's House. There's another very important Reuben Kadish mural in the closed University Extension campus that nobody can gain access to. There's artwork in many of our schools that, of course, is inaccessible, too. And one last thing, just in the realm of the danger of these artworks, the University of California, my alma mater, just sold off at surplus a few years ago, a 9-by-22-foot carved organ screen by the African-American artist Sargent Johnson. They sold it off as surplus for $150, even though it was clearly marked as a WPA project and so should belong to all of us. They sold it for $150,000. The Huntington apparently bought it for a sum well over six figures.
We should mention, by the way, that we have photos of at least the Coit Tower mural. So as Dr. Brecken is suggesting, there are many, many others all around the Bay Area. But photos of the Coit Tower murals are on our website, kqed.org/forum. Here's one about, and you mentioned schools, a WPA mural is prominently featured in the entry to Burlingame High School. This person writes in, it was at risk of being removed from its location in the 1970s, but it's remained in place and needs restoration. They really are all over. I mean, you walk into post offices in Berkeley and Burlingame as well, where you find San Mateo, Redwood City, Richmond. Yeah. What are a few of your favorites that you think people really ought to see for their quality, but also might be threatened as well?
Well, that's difficult to say because there's so much of it. But I guess my all-time favorite is the Rincon Annex murals at Spear and Market Street. Coit Tower, the first federal art projects in the country, and those are the last because they were actually done after the war by Anton Refregier, and they're an astonishing series of paintings that depicts San Francisco history through the eyes of labor and turns it into a kind of a universal history. Hmm. They're some of the best in the country, and they're now part of a mixed-use complex. It's actually it was a post office at one time, but I will say that the people who own Rincon Center have done just an exemplary job of restoring them and keeping them open to the public.
And to Lenore in San Francisco. Lenore, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm the director of the arts program at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, where we are the proud location of a Zach Heim mural. I have two comments to make. One is that I invite your listeners to Google WPA projects in San Francisco, as I've recently done, and you will be astonished at the depth and breadth of the effect on our city, and of the projects, the infrastructure, the public works, the art, everything.
Lenore, would you give that URL again?
I'm sorry, I'm sitting in my car, and I just Googled it.
Okay. Google WPA. All right.
The second thing is that I recently did a project about Vera Mostel, who was the great comedic actor who started out as a WPA artist. And in terms of the way we look at American history, to see someone whose creativity and the freedom of expression as all these artists were championed and heralded during the 50s, and then they're during the 30s, and then 20 years later, we're all victims of McCarthyism, and where there was no freedom of expression, and where they were lost their jobs and lost their livelihoods. Some of them committed suicide because the WPA arts was not only about visual art; there were actors and plays and writers, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's really important because kids today know nothing about any of this, because I've done a project with the Zero Mostel Project where I've gone to high schools and I've talked to kids.
Yeah,
and
Lenore?
They have absolutely no idea about the WPA or about McCarthyism.
Lenore, thank you. Yeah, let me hold you there and let's spend a moment on resources. John Gollinger, yep. First on where people can find out more and then more about also your project, Dr. Brecken, yep. The Living New Deal project.
Sure. Let me give a couple. One, I mean, our efforts, you can look at our website at protectcoittower.org, see what the ballot measure is, some pictures of the tower, that some of the damaged murals. Also, there's a fabulous book, and one of the reasons I'm was so inspired to spend a lot of time volunteering on this effort is one of the daughters of Bernard Zockheim. Two of the daughters publish a book called Coit Tower, Its History and Art, which you can find at volcanopress.com. And that is a book that displays each of the murals, stories about them, some of the political context. It's the only place I've seen where the story of the murals that was mentioned earlier that were chipped away because there was a Soviet symbol in one of them that, you know, some people thought was promoting communism when it was actually just contrasting with other schools of thought. And as was mentioned, Coit Tower was shut down for a time period and padlocked, and then those murals mysteriously were chipped out. Those you can see actually a picture in the Examiner at the time juxtapose a picture of that symbol with the Bernard Zockheim mural, even though they had nothing to do with one another. It's an incredible story.
And where else, Greg Brecken, can people find out more about the resources that are all around the city?
Well, you can find out by going to livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. It's the Living New Deal Project, which I'm the scholar of, based at the UC Department of Geography. And we've been, for the last 7 years or so, we've been mapping all the New Deal physical objects that we could find in California. And this year, we've expanded to the entire nation. So we welcome input from anybody in the United States about New Deal projects, not just WPA, but CCC, PWA, CWA, all these things left us stuff. And the purpose of this is not only to reveal incredibly beautiful and well-made things, but to show people how indispensable it is. We all use it every day without knowing it, and to show what government at its most compassionate and ingenious is capable of creating for everybody, to improve everybody's lives.
And it's interesting because these projects really are everywhere. They're the stone wall that you see in a park or a picnic shelter in a state park, which are also, of course, entities that are endangered right now with the prospect of various state parks being closed.
Yeah, I just walked down here from the BART station and walked over a WPA stamp on Cap Street. They did the sidewalks all through the south of Market area. They paved roads all over the Bay Area. They created our airports. The San Francisco International Airport began as a WPA project, also the Oakland Airport. So we're using it all the time. But I think the most important thing is we take for granted clean drinking water. In 1933, Americans couldn't. But 6 years later, virtually all of us had safe drinking water. Imagine the aid to public health in that, and yet we began to take it for granted. So those systems are now falling apart.
And let's take a call from the daughter of a mural artist, Ruth Gottstein. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Ruth Gottstein. I was Ruth Zockheim. I was 11 years old when the murals were being painted in Coit Tower. I still remember the smell of the wet plaster and the artists on their scaffolds, all working there in harmony, and I will never forget it. I am also portrayed in my father's mural, The Library, in the lower left-hand corner in a midi blouse.
And so obviously this is very personal to you. What is your concern about whether or not those murals will be there for future generations?
I'm a native San Franciscan, and in my opinion, nothing like Coit Tower will ever happen again. The building itself, the murals that were done, the harmony, and the vision that the artists portrayed, both of their times and looking ahead very positively to the future, it's a unique form of art, and it is of a worldwide importance. One can travel everywhere in the world, and if you see that little Coit Tower icon, you know they're talking about San Francisco. Mm-hmm.
Ruth Gottstein, thanks so much for calling in. Thanks for your contribution and your father's, of course, to the murals that we're focusing on today.
And don't forget to order our book.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. I mean, I live near Coit Tower. I'm lucky enough to live in that part of the city. But until I read this book, I didn't understand the breadth of what it's about. And I want to encourage people who live around the Bay Area, anywhere in the world, but around the Bay Area, to go to Coit Tower. It's a public space, and that's one thing that makes it worth protecting.
So here, want to read some of our emails coming in. Judy writes in about the Coit Tower murals. I've been in the Bay Area for 40 years, and it was only last year that I made a visit to the murals. I was awestruck by their beauty and most curious about their history. Our colleague Spencer Michaels, who did the story this week on Coit Tower for the PBS NewsHour, made the observation that while he was standing there, he saw people just sort of streaming in and going right up the elevator, but not looking at the murals. Yeah. And it is sort of an interesting phenomenon about that site, that they're there, but not everyone realizes that they are. Another comment, the fantastical Hiller murals at the Maritime Museum, a building above Aquatic Park, do not in their imagery broadcast a political message, but the artists who worked on the building were of the same ilk as the muralists of Coit Tower. What do you see at the Maritime Museum, Gray Brecken?
Well, Hiller painted submarine scenes there of Atlantis and Lemuria, and they're kind of surreal, actually. They're very unusual for WPA artwork because it's supposed to be representational, but these are really kind of surrealistic murals, and they've just been restored, and they're in terrific shape now. So people should go to the Aquatic Park, San Francisco Aquatic Park, and see them.
Here's an interesting question. Patrice writes, and there are hundreds of art restoration students and faculty who would jump at the chance to help restore the murals at Coit Tower. Have they considered an academic partnership with a local university? John Gollinger.
That's a fantastic idea. I don't know that that's been considered. I mean, the way that the restoration's gone about before and is proceeding, at least at the moment, is a sort of slow, considered, do a study, figure it out approach. I'm not sure that there's been thinking outside the box, but there absolutely needs to be.
Are you aware of those partnerships through the university, Gray Brecken?
No, I'm not, but it's a great idea. And certainly one of the first things I'd like them to look at is those murals at the Mother's House, because they need to be saved because they're just being ruined now.
Well, if there's anyone listening this morning who's involved in an art program at one of our local universities or colleges or institutes, and you're interested in playing a role and helping to preserve some of these murals, how would they go about doing that? Get in touch with either your project or yours, John Gollinger?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the Art Commission does have an
or the Art Commission
program,
itself.
And they did, I think, in part response to the efforts that we've accomplished in the last few months. Now, if you go to the SF Art Commission's website, one of the top features is a request to donate to support the Coit Tower murals and elsewhere.
Here's someone writing in saying, I want to echo Doris's comments. That was the person who called in about the unkept state of the area around Coit Tower. And this person says, and apply them to Buena Vista Park, such a beautiful park, but so unkept. It's too bad.
And that's WPA, too.
Buena Vista Park is.
Yeah, you can see the retaining walls are actually the smashed marble and granite headstones from the cemeteries that the WPA workers were removing at that time. They reused them for the retaining walls in Buena Vista Park.
So were a lot of parks and tree plantings, Rose Garden in Berkeley, all of those were also part of
it's
those
all new
WPA,
deal. Yeah.
All New Deal efforts.
The tennis courts, the public golf courses like Lincoln Park, they democratized things which had previously been only available to the wealthy. And we've been taking it for granted ever since then.
Let's take another call. John joins us from Point Reyes, also the child of a muralist. John, go ahead, please.
Yeah, John Langdon in Point Reyes. My dad, Gordon Langdon, was one of the muralists. And I'm afraid the previous caller stole my thunder because I'm a retired contractor and I'm now a painter. And I'm thinking I would jump at the chance to work on those murals for nothing. And I think a lot of the students in the Bay Area schools, the Art Institute, CCAC, would jump at the chance too, and you can incorporate it into their education. I think you could get a lot of eager, interested, good talent for practically nothing.
It's a great idea, John, and I'm glad you've called in. And both our guests, Gray Brecken and John Gollinger, are I think, happy to hear that offer. Again, if people who are listening want to get involved in helping to do restorative efforts, what's the best way to go about doing that?
I mean, protectcoittower.org, and we will certainly either take you up on your offer ourselves or put you in touch with the right people. The Art Commission, SF Art Commission, would be another way. And
they could contact us through livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. I want to mention one other artifact that I'm very concerned about. It's a 37 by 41 foot model of San Francisco with every building on it in 1940 that is stored in crates at a University of California warehouse. I've got to find a home for that thing, or they're probably going to discard it. It was done by the WPA for planning purposes. It's an extraordinary artifact, and it needs to be restored and reassembled for both San Franciscans and tourists to be seen in San Francisco.
I just want to add, I mean, the restoration of the murals at Koi Tower is one piece of it. It's not the only piece. Ruth Gottstein didn't mention it there, but she, when she called me back in October and said, do something about this, she mentioned it then, which is every day these murals are not being, you know, it's a long-term problem. They're not being displayed properly. The lighting is poor. You walk in the door, the first light you see on the left is broken and cracked. It really doesn't give them the value they deserve, and there's nobody there to show you around. So we need to restore them, but then for the next 20 years and beyond, we need to showcase them in a respectful and, mm-hmm. and proper way.
Here's another question about a local mural. For selfish reasons, I'm wondering about the conditions of the murals that were uncovered in the 1980s in the lobby of Laguna Honda Hospital. They're the work of my cousin, Glenn Wessels, who mm-hmm. was also an administrator of WPA projects in the East Bay. We see how personal is to, mm-hmm. to so many people.
I love to hear this stuff. Yeah, those are beautiful murals of San Francisco scenes. I haven't seen them for quite some time. The statue of Florence Nightingale out front is a WPA sculpture, too.
And let's get in another caller. We just have a moment left, Karen, but go ahead, please, with your contribution.
Yes, great show. Bill Murray bailed out and paid for the Salinas Library because that was threatened to be closed along with the museum that's there. So we've got baseball players, football players, 49ers. These people get $10, $20, $30 million a year. Let's have them make a little gift back to the city that has supported them, built stadiums for them, publicized them, and adored them. Let them be, maybe ask the teams and the players to each, I mean, each one of them easily could just give $20,000.
Okay, I'm going to hold you there. We're venturing into 49er territory, which is appropriate in some ways, but we'll see whether or not we can get some of those individuals to be a part of this too. Just have a brief last comment. You made such an eloquent case, Gray Brecken, before about the value of public art. So I want to give you the last word, but briefly, if you would, please, on why this matters so much.
Well, it matters because what the Roosevelt administration did during the Great Depression to get us out of the Great Depression, and they were successful at doing that, could work again. And we need to study it. We need to have direct pay work programs like they did at that time, which were never an option with the Obama administration. But we need to immediately employ millions of Americans to do socially beneficial work the way they did in the 30s to rebuild this infrastructure, which is now crumbling underneath our feet. It's desperate. And that will go immediately into the nation's bloodstream.
Gray Brecken, he is the project scholar for the Living New Deal Project. He joined us along with John Gollinger, who is chair of the Protect Koi Tower Committee. Thanks both very much for being part of our program today.
My pleasure.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.